Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast.
Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
All right, well, happy Thursday, everybody. It's Rich Birch from the Unseminary Podcast. Thanks so much for tuning in. This is the podcast where we try to provide just real practical help for church leaders. And today, it's our privilege, it's my privilege to have Rob Cizik on the phone. Super excited to have him. He's from the North Shore Community Church. Christian church. I'm sorry. He's Christian, not community. So glad to have
We're
you,
We're both, actually.
Exactly. Rob, thanks for being on the show today.
Oh, well, it's great to be here, Rich, and hello to everybody out on the podcast. Glad to be here.
Rob's one of those guys that I just love following online. I just count it a privilege today that we get a chance to kind of sit down and chat a little bit. He's a fantastic guy. We'll give you some ways for you to get in touch with him a little later in the show, but I really do think he should be on your list of people that you're following. So Rob, why don't you tell us a little bit about North Shore? Tell us about your church, your context, your ministry.
All right, well, I feel very blessed to be part of our organization. North Shore is a church of about 1,500 and a school of 1,000 students during the week here in the Seattle area. We have a beautiful campus that overlooks Puget Sound, and God's doing some great things here in the Northwest. As many of you know, it's not the South in terms of Christian culture. It can be a little bit challenging, and it's been great to see God at work up here.
Very cool. Now, today we're going to talk about conflict resolution and kind of being conflict avoidant, which I think a lot of us can struggle with. In fact, just this week I was walking one of my leaders through a situation where, you know, I said to them, I was like, listen, we avoided some pain back in April, and that pain came to roost here in July. because we should have made a tough call back then, and we made what was a, hey, let's just try to keep everybody moving along. And it festered until this point, and it kind of all blew up all over us this week. And so when I knew that this interview was coming up, I was like, okay, I got my notepad ready. I'm looking forward to learn from Rob today, because I think you're, you know, an expert in this. Let's talk about it. Why is it, do you think, that church leaders they can be conflict avoidant?
Well, I think it gets to two things, really. One is just the whole vibe of church and the way many of us were raised. And I can't speak to everybody's church experience, but I know on my own, the whole idea of going to church was we'd literally put on our Sunday best clothes. We'd shine up the car. Right. We'd put on our best behavior. Huh. And we're just so nice to each other, you know, because we love Christ. And we want to love other people, and of course, then we're going to be nicer than everybody else, right?
Right.
So I think you have this whole facade wow. of nice that a lot of people have been exposed to, and I think that in some ways is where it starts. But where I really became aware of this personally was it's an East Coast West Coast thing. I was born on the West Coast. I was in Southern California. And everybody was so nice. They're so casual, just easygoing, never a problem. You know, just this whole vibe. But what would end up happening was when there was a problem, you just kind of stuffed it down and bit your tongue. Mm. You know, maybe nobody would ever come to your face and say, "Hey, there's a problem here." They might cut you up in the parking lot behind your back.
Right.
But they wouldn't come to your face. So you kind of kept this nice facade of nice. Well, I got a job on the East Coast, and I moved to the East Coast.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my, was that an experience in directness. All right.
Right.
I might as well have, that plane that might as well have landed in a foreign country as far as it being a cultural difference. And I got on the job, and almost immediately I felt like nobody liked me.
Right.
They were coming at me. They were telling me about these problems. They were telling me what I was doing wrong. I'm like, oh, man, I'm just not doing well here. And after about a year, I came to the conclusion, I realized a couple of things. One, they did like me.
Right.
It's just that they were being direct with me.
Right.
And they were telling me the things that I needed to hear. And I also realized that on the East Coast in general, I always knew where I stood with people.
Right.
And as soon as I realized that, I'm like, oh, people do like me. They're being direct with me. And then I had this realization, oh my gosh, the air is really clear around here. I love this East Coast thing because we're not carrying around all these offenses and all this baggage and that thing you said about me 3 years ago. I'm still holding on to it.
Oh, gosh.
You know, I mean, the East Coast was like a graduate school in being direct. And I'm so grateful that I had that experience in my life. And since having moved back to the West Coast, I can definitely confirm that style difference is still alive and well.
That's amazing. So. You know, it's funny being in New Jersey or in Jersey, as they call it around here. You know, I could see that, you know, that there's almost like a pride in this part of the world of like, I am just going to put it all out there. I'm going to be right in your face with what's going on, which it can be. We've struggled with people who have come from other parts of the country because they don't get it. They don't understand that. And they can feel really hurt as opposed to like, no, we're trying to be clear. So yeah. That's amazing. So what can church leaders do? How do we kind of learn to be direct and to be open and to kind of handle conflict rather than just stuffing it down?
Well, this was part of my own journey. I was a kind of a recovering indirect person, I guess, when I landed on the East Coast. And that really challenged me to say, okay, well, how do I develop a direct leadership style? And one, I had to realize that there really are two kinds of direct.
Okay.
And I think that's important for people to understand. There's bad direct, and bad direct is what really a lot of people, I'd say probably 90% of people think of it when they think of direct, and it's somebody yelling at them.
Okay.
That's how most people have experienced, particularly West Coast people have experienced direct, is, wow, things really came to a boiling point. And the first time that I started hearing stuff for real was when somebody is like in my face and yelling at me. This is really uncomfortable. And frankly, that makes people conflict avoidant. It makes them direct avoidant because it's uncomfortable. And then there's good direct. And good direct really is about speaking truth in love. And to me, the best example of this came from the Apostle Paul. And if you read his letters, there's really two things going on. One is there's no question that it's direct, but look at how he does it, all right? He'll usually start his letters like, dear church that I started, man, I am so glad you're there. I am so glad that you're on board with Jesus. I am so glad that you're giving it your best effort. I am just really encouraged by you guys. He'll start it out that way, and then he'll send six chapters talking about, hey, and very directly, this is what's going on. I'm not digging this because of this. You guys are doing this. It's not working because of this. I mean, he is just brutally honest with his churches. And then you get to the last part of Paul's letters, and they close kind of the way they start. You know, guys, I know you got all these problems, but that's okay. That's to be expected. Keep up the good fight, man. When I get out of jail, I'm coming your way.
Right.
You know, I really love that because with Paul, one, the relationship was always there. It was never a question about the person. Hey, I'm affirming you. I'm affirming your church. I want to come and hang with you. I want to see you guys. I really do have your best interest at heart. And I care about you so much that I'm going to take each of these points directly. And I think, you know, he just gives us a beautiful way of speaking truth and love to each other, of keeping relationships going when you're talking directly with people.
Can you give me an example of how that might work? So let's take the example, and this wasn't the example of what happened in our church this week, but, you know, of say you're an executive pastor. A lot of people that listen to the podcast are executive pastors, senior pastors. And let's say that the student guy or student gal just did something wrong. Now, this is just theoretical. That just could never happen. But let's say that, you know, they had an event where you know, the senior pastor heard something, was like, I heard you did this crazy thing. How would you suggest applying that kind of approach to, you know, trying to not just avoid the conflict?
Sure. Well, let me give you a few thoughts on how to handle that.
Exactly.
How to develop your own style. One, a good direct conversation starts with intent, and that actually starts before the conversation. If people know that you have their best interest and the best interest of the organization at heart, they're grown-ups. People sense it. They get it.
Right.
They're much more willing to accept what you have to say to them. Mm-hmm. So make sure that in all of your dealings with people in advance, they know what your intent is. Also, make sure that you have a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. Every conversation, every interaction or exchange that we have with somebody, you're either putting a deposit into that relationship or you're taking a withdrawal. And that's everybody every day.
So
and before you go in and have that conversation with that minister who's maybe a little bit challenged, make sure that you've helped them solve a problem. Make sure that you've asked about their family. Make sure that you've cared for them in some way so that you've put deposits in that relationship so that when you have to sit down and have that difficult conversation
right.
and that you're speaking with them directly, if that's a withdrawal for them, you're still in the positive relational balance. Watch your tone. You realize that as a leader, and I think it's easy for us to forget this sometimes, our words carry a ton of weight.
So true. So true.
I mean, we don't have to yell. We don't have to stand up on chairs. We don't have to wave our arms around. Okay. Just us saying something carries a ton of weight. So have a calm, friendly, professional, approachable tone when you're sitting down to speak with that person who may not be doing everything just the way you want it to do. Preface your comments, okay? Start by saying, like Paul does, I really appreciate your work, and I know that you're on board because you tried that new thing in student ministry, and that's innovative. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a couple of concerns.
Right.
Would it be all right if I shared those concerns with you?
Hmm.
What that
I love
does,
that. I love that. I love what you've done there. I just want to point that out. You've started with, you know, baselining, saying like, hey, I really appreciate what you're doing in the ministry. And that's not just, you're not just trying to butter people up. You're trying to say, this is what I actually believe. This is the foundation of what I believe. And then you've asked for permission to share. I love that. Why would you do that? Why is that important?
Well, it's really funny. When I started my career, I was a line person,
mm-hmm.
and I had friends with the line people, and it was absolutely amazing how intelligent all of the people around me at the line level were. And then I got into management, and I'm not sure what happened, but it felt like everybody on the line level, what are they doing? This is
right,
crazy.
Right.
They're, you know, these aren't the same people that I knew.
Yes.
Well, it was just my perspective that had shifted, and I share that with you because remember, those line people, the people that you're dealing with, they're smart.
Yes.
They get it. They're emotionally intelligent. And I think sometimes as a leader, because we just see so many kind of the dumb things, we start maybe, oh man, these people really aren't, you know, nobody could be that relationally intelligent and be making mistakes like that. But that's simply not the case. People are smart. They get it. And sorry, I got a little thing on the screen here. They get it. So you need to speak with people like adults, like grown-ups, with respect.
Right.
They are intelligent. People get it if you're talking down to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you set the conversation up that way because it immediately says, hey, I know you're smart. I know you get it. I know you have the best will of this organization at heart. I recognize there's a problem, but this isn't a problem with you, and I'm going to respect you as an adult. When you do that, you tend to get a very grown-up answer back.
Right.
So that's why you set it up that way.
Right. Right. Very cool.
I think there's a couple of other things that you can do when having that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Get right to it. Sometimes because we're nice people, we sit around over a cup of coffee and we talk about the dog and we talk about the kids and we talk about, you know, what was on 24 last night or whatever. But we don't get right to it, and that drives people crazy. They know they're having this conversation for a reason.
Right.
Guys, just get to it, okay?
Right.
And frame the conversation when you're having it with common sense. This is something that everybody can relate to. Hey, you went out there and spent all of that money on student ministry, and I understand why you did it. You wanted to create a special interest, but how would we feel if that figure was published in the church bulletin? That we got a minister went out and spent all this money this way. What do you guys think? Would you, you know, And oh, that kind of makes sense. There's this kind of a common sense thing there. Always kind of bring it back around to the organization's mission, why other people might see it differently, and the lights tend to come on. And the last thing I would say about having that difficult direct conversation is say everything. Mm-hmm. All right.
Right.
Bill Hybels is a great way of explaining this. He says, have the conversation to the last 2%. It's always that, 50% of the stuff's easy to talk about. Another 40% of the stuff is challenging, but most people are up for it. It's that last 2%. It's right. That thing that's just driving you crazy, probably driving them crazy too, that we're most afraid to talk about. Have it. The conversation, it's there. The ball is teed up. The person's in front of you. You've had 98% of this conversation. Don't chicken out on that last 2%. Okay. The last 2% is important because what it says to the individual is, one, I love you enough that we're going to go there. Mm-hmm. And we're going to go all the way there. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, when the person walks out of your office after having that conversation, they know this thing's been discussed.
Right.
There isn't another little segment of this that I'm worried is going to come up in another 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. The air is clear. When you do the 100% of the conversation, it clears the air. It has amazing impacts on your relationship with the individual. The real funny thing about being indirect is we want to be indirect because we want to spare people's feelings. But what's odd is it creates grudges. People are holding on to things.
So true.
When you're direct with somebody, it seems intuitively that you're going to tick them off. But there's many times the opposite effect, and that is, wow, this guy loves me enough to go 100% of the way, clear the air. Now I've got short accounts with this guy. I know I'm good with this guy. I know where I'm going. And now I'm confident. And you have those kind of relationships with people. One, as a leader, it's a great way to be. It strengthens your position as a leader, but it really promotes relationships with your team. And lastly, if you do this with a bunch of people, it has a cumulative effect in the organization. Mm. And it frees other people up to be direct with each other. And it really kind of clears the air. It's okay, if I got a problem, I know I can go and I can talk to Rich about it, and everything's going to be fine. Has a great cumulative effect on the organization.
Yeah, we've kind of adopted that, particularly that last 2% in our organization, where when there's a conflict situation, often you'll hear people say, like, is there another 2%? Is there anything else that's on the table?
Yeah.
Let's get it out now. And which does have a, I've been in those situations where it really does clear the air and you're like, no, I've said everything there is. There isn't, I don't have this one last thing that I'm holding on to, which can make a huge difference. Rob, a comment, what about, or a question, what if the situation's reversed? Let's say I'm the person, that's being supervised and my supervisor, they did something that was a bit boneheaded. How does this change or modify? How do you try to be direct with that person? How have you experienced that in your environment?
Well, what I found is you have to be as willing to take it as you are to give it.
Okay.
And you have to set the table to allow your folks to be as direct with you as you have been with them. Some of that's implicit. If you're modeling directness, they may have an easier time coming at you. But I think as a leader, you need to invite it. And a lot of times in a regular meeting, monthly meeting I might have with a staff member, I'll say, hey, listen, what can I do to help? Is there anything that I can be doing better for you? Do you have any feedback for me? And I try to invite that.
Right.
And then when they are direct with me, even if it does kind of cut, and sometimes it does, I'll just thank the person for, letting me know where they're at. And this, the permission, that dynamic that you're talking about is something that's just, it's built up over months and years. And make sure that you're as willing to take it as give it, and invite your people to do it. And eventually they'll feel safe and be willing to do it with you.
Very cool. Anything else you'd love to share with people before we jump into the lightning round?
Well, just one last thought.
Yep.
This stuff takes courage. It is so much easier just to let something ride. You're talking about it earlier, let's just kind of let it ride, or, maybe they'll get it on their own, or maybe somebody else will say something to them. No. Not going to happen.
It's so true.
guys, have the courage to have those direct conversations. It's very much worth it.
This is the Unseminary Podcast. Stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
All right, well, welcome to the lightning round, that part of the show where we jump through similar questions that we ask everybody that's on the show today. We have Rob Cizik on the phone. Super excited to have him with us today. Thanks for being here, Rob. Rob, is there an online resource that you're using these days that you're finding particularly helpful for your ministry?
Yeah. Thanks, Rich, and hey, everybody. Yeah, we've got a couple of them. At work, we're using Church Community Builder, which is a church management database online, all in the cloud. Absolutely loving it. People can update their own profiles. Fantastic for our small groups ministry, promoting a lot of interaction there. Allows us to better manage requests and things as they come through the church. Just a great online resource that they've built there. Personally, I'm really enjoying Google Play. It's got a feature that allows you to upload your entire music library to Google servers.
Nice.
And then stream it to all of your devices. So I don't have to clog up my phone with a whole bunch of songs. I don't have to clog up my pad. So, you know, whether it's an iPad, it's my phone, it's my work computer, it's my home laptop, any of those things, I've got all my music right there. Just brilliant. And probably like a lot of people, I'm really enjoying Dropbox and Evernote. Keep my work documents on Dropbox. They're with me everywhere I go. Evernote, I'm using it to do all of my meeting notes that I keep with me. I'm doing it to do all of my blog posts. And then it's right there. It's on my tablet. It's on my home computer. It's on my work computer. It's on my phone. And it's fantastic to be able to have that information with you right away. Some great tools.
Very cool. All right. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, 6 months to a year that's had an impact on your thinking or your ministry?
Oh, man, one of the biggies this year for me has been Disciple Shift by Jim Putman.
Great book.
Bottom line is, it's about relational discipleship, which means basically he kind of says, hey, church, if all you're doing is giving people biblical education and head knowledge about God, and all you're doing is encouraging them just to serve in the church, you're not going far enough.
Right.
That you need to actively, proactively be in relationship with people, know their spiritual condition, actively be helping them grow spiritually, be creating relational environments within your church where that can happen. It's been revolutionary for me, and it's been revolutionary for our church.
Very cool. What's another ministry that you're looking up to, or you look up to and say, like, wow, those guys are just doing a great job, kind of inspired by them?
I got two favorites right now. One is Catalyst, and another is Orange.
Oh, great.
Catalyst, just with its heart to equip younger leaders, that's very similar to my own heart. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate that they do it at the level they do it, with a very high quality of both presentation and information. And the other one that I mentioned was Orange. For many of the same reasons, their student and children's ministry curriculum and support. The Orange team is one of the hardest working bunch of people that I know. They have a major conference in Atlanta every year, but then they get on airplanes, and throughout the year they're bringing regional conferences. We host one here at our church, and that's how I got to know those guys. And their curriculum is excellent, but their leadership from the top on down is fantastic. And I'm always inspired by the information, the quality, the relationship, the hard work, everything those guys do, just top notch.
Very cool. Yeah. Like I've said this in the past, I think the Orange Conference is a must attend. Actually, just this week, we approved, even though it's next April or whenever it is, we approved for our entire ministry, family ministry team to head down there to Atlanta. They're going to do, it's like 20 some odd people going down, and they're doing like a road trip thing. I'd highly suggest that for, you know, church leaders.
Me too.
All right, so if you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, and you could just get 15 minutes with them to kind of drill in a little bit, who would you want to get that time with and why?
Wow. I love that question. I'd like 15 minutes of Andy Stanley's time.
Okay,
and
cool.
Here's why. I've noticed that the people I like Andy Stanley. And it's strange because I'll meet somebody and I think, oh man, I just kind of feel a kindred spirit here. And the next thing I hear, they've got some connection to Andy Stanley. They listen to his podcast. They worked at North Point one time. That, you know, whatever. But Andy, what I would want if I had the time with him, what I would ask him about is how have you so prolifically been able to have a positive influence on the greater evangelical church. And to me, that's what Andy does.
Absolutely.
It's hard enough to run a small church. It's harder still to run a mega church. But to be able to run a mega church and have this very positive impact that he has, I just find that intriguing. That's what I'd ask Andy about.
Yeah, very true. You know, they're such an interesting organization, how they've, and Andy's leadership has spawned so much stuff out of North Point. The two organizations you just talked about, Catalyst, Orange, you know, the whole, you know, the big stuff camps. There's been so much that's come out of North Point. So that's true. That's fantastic. All right. So when you're not pursuing, you know, healthy conflict with people and you're just kind of kicking back, you want to have fun, you know, Rob, what do you do? How do you just have fun with your family, friends, that kind of thing? What do you do for fun?
Well, we're here in the Northwest, and I got a kayak. I love to get out on our waterways. We've got lakes, we've got rivers, we got Puget Sound right here. Real fun to, you know, to get out there and reconnect. And for those of you who don't kayak, I highly recommend it. It's not a motorboat. It's a very still, very peaceful experience. A great way to connect with God, even in that there's just so quiet and you're out in His creation. It's just a wonderful thing for me. I love hanging out with my kids. I've got two teenagers. They're getting to the point where they're looking at leaving home soon. So I want to make sure I get in as much relationship with them as I can. And the last thing I really enjoy doing is blogging. Blogging because I enjoy writing. It helps me process my thoughts. I also feel that I've been blessed to have a lot of leadership experiences in my life, and the blog is one way to be able to share those with others, and I really enjoy doing that.
Very cool. Well, Rob, I really appreciate you being on the show today. If people want to check out that blog or get in touch with you and your ministry, how can they do that?
Well, easiest thing to do is robcizek.com, R-O-B, last name C-I-Z-E-K. I know it's kind of unusual. Sometimes I wish I had a name like Smith or something, but robcizek.com. I'm going to put up a summary of this conversation on how to develop a direct style on my website. So if you're looking for a summary of today's conversation, just go there.
Perfect. I'll link to that as well from On Seminary. So either way, if wherever you heard about this, we'd love to get you connected with Rob. Rob is one of those guys that, like I say earlier, follow his blog, follow his on Twitter. He's a great guy, great leader. You're going to want to get to know him. Thanks so much, Rob, for being on the show today.
Thanks, Rich. Have a great day.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.